Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Krisus Daf Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's Shiur at the end of the top line of Daf Tes, Tanya Idoch. We have a Tanaic source that you can see is in a frame. The Pasuk says, Yaseh Ishe Reach Nichoach Lashem. Shomeani, I would learn from this Pasuk, Kol She'ola Le'ishim, anything that's included as being placed on the fire. Afilu Mincha, even a meal offering. We should point out that we are in the middle of a discussion concerning the sacrifice that a ger, a convert to Judaism, is expected to bring. So in the Pasuk, we see a reference to the bringing of something that's placed on the fire. Does that include even a meal offering? That a convert who would bring a meal offering, that would be sufficient? Talmud Lomar, Kasher Tasu Ken Ya'aseh, as the Jews did in their mass national conversion, so to speak, to official Judaism, so too the ger, the convert, throughout the generations is to do. Ma'atem minei domim, just like the Jewish people brought animals, which domim is a reference to blood, something that is contains blood as opposed to a meal offering. Af heim, so too gerim, converts, minei domim, are expected to bring something that is of a blood nature. Ima atem oilu shlomim afheim oilu shlomim. If just like the Jewish people brought in actuality an ola offering as well as a shlomim offering, is that the case with regard to converts throughout the generations? Talmud lomar kochem kager yeh, meaning lochem hikshesiv v'loi lekorbano sechem. I've compared the ger throughout generations to you, the Jewish people, but only in part, but not with regard to all of your korbanos. So that there is a comparison to the Jewish people, namely, just like the Jewish people in the desert went through a form of conversion, and that involved the bringing of sacrifices, so too, in every generation, a ger that converts to Judaism is expected to bring sacrifices. However, the comparison is only partial, namely, whereas the Jewish people brought two types of sacrifices, an ola and a shlamim, the ger will bring, or is expected to bring, only one, the ola offering. Rebbe Omer, kochem ka'avosechem, like you, so like your forefathers, ma'avosechem lo nichnasu lebris ela b'mila utvila v'hartzoas dam, just like the original Jewish people entered the covenantal community through these methods, circumcision with regard to males, immersion in a mikveh, which is tevila, and hartzoas dam, the sprinkling of blood of sacrifices, afhein, so too, throughout the generations, converts, lo yikonsu lebris, will not enter the covenantal community, elo, bemila, utvila, vahartzoas domim, through circumcision, immersion, and a blood offering. Lahavi, preido achas yefshar, to bring a singular bird offering, that is not an option. We don't find a singular bird being brought as an offering. Therefore, when speaking about a bird offering, we'll be speaking about two birds being brought. The Gemara now has a line that we have placed in brackets. You'll notice the star comment on the outside margin, on the inside margin, that is, where we've written Sograim L'Shem Diluk. These brackets are for the purpose of skipping. Kushas HaGemara Demofi Achareim, the Gemara will be asking a question immediately after this very brief bracketed section. is al ma dikotoni bebraisa lifneim. It's a reference to that which appeared. The question will be focused on that which appeared in the braisa just before these brackets. So it says in the Gemara right after the brackets, the Gemara raises a question, velo, is that so that we don't find a singular bird offering? V'hotanya, we have a Tanaic source that will teach us the contrary. The hikrivo there is in the pasuk. Ma tamad lomar, what is the point of this word? Lefi shenemar b'toyrim, since in the context of bird offerings it says v'hikriv, which is mashma, which implies a complete sacrifice. Shomea ani, I would derive from that lo yivchos mishnei predin, that one who says that he wants to bring an olasof, he shall bring no less than two birds. Tamad lomar v'hikrivo, therefore I have the word from the opening of this Tanaic source, which indicates afilu predo achas, even a singular bird offering would qualify. So that if a person had said hare olai oila sa'of, he could bring a singular bird offering. So why does the Tanaic source above, before the bracketed section, why does it say that to bring a singular bird, well, that is not an option? The Gemara answers, choyvo miho lo ashikon, an obligatory offering brought as birds, you don't find a singular bird offering. And if you're dealing with gerus, a convert, if a person makes the decision to convert, we would call that then an obligatory offering, and hence there is no option of bringing a singular bird, but rather two birds is an option. In the bracketed section that we skipped, this we saw actually on Daf Ches Amud Beis, where it had said, Lo Omru Kain Elo Lahokel Olav, the mention of a bird offering, and a kain is a reference to two birds, that was stated as a means of leniency for the convert, as opposed to his needing to bring a full animal offering, a complete behemoth, which is much more costly than the cost of two birds. The Gemara asks, Ve'oika yoledes, is there not the woman who gave birth that has a sacrificial obligation upon her? Demasya ben yoina otor lechatos, as part of her sacrifices, she brings a singular bird offering, a yona or a tor, which are the names of different varieties of birds, but she brings that as a sin offering. So we see that a woman brings an obligatory, we see the bringing of an obligatory offering of a bird as a singular bird. The Gemara answers, well, it's not a bird brought in isolation. It's mishum de'iko keves bahado. The woman is also bringing, this woman who gave birth, she is also bringing a sheep as well as part of her sacrifices. Omar mar, ma avosechem lo nichnasu lebris elo v'chulei. We mentioned above, we have a little star to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, which enables you to find where this quote is coming from. We had mentioned in the Brisa at the upper part of the page that just like the original Jewish people entered the covenantal community through three methods, Mila, Tvila, and Hartzoaz Dam, so too Gerim of future generations. So the Gemara now goes through each one of those elements, the Mila, and you can see we have a double underline in our Gemara with dots in it. This is explained in the outside margin under our Nosei Mivne heading, where we tell you, we offer you a topic heading combined with a structural note. The structural note features explanations of the different geometric forms that are used in our Gemara. Here we have this double underline with dots in it, and we've explained, Gerus shel Am Yisrael, B'Yitzias Mitzrayim, the conversion of the Jewish people upon their exodus from Egypt, Al Yidei, was through three methods, Mila, Hartzoaz Domim, and Tfila, and each one of these are highlighted with our double underline. So the Gemara says, Bishlama Mila Dichtiv, we find that, and we understand very well, Mila was one of the methods, one of the three methods, Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, and there we have a little aleph here because there are two possible sources for this historical fact. It says, Ki mulim hoyu kolo amayotzim, the nation had been circumcised, inami mehocha, and alternatively, from the following, you can see this idea, ve'avor olayach v'orech mizboiseses bedomayach, the Pasuk is referring to the Almighty passing over us and seeing us in our blood, ve'oymer loch bedomayach chayi, and I proclaim that through your blood you will live. The blood here is a reference to the blood that emerges during a circumcision. So we see the reference to the Jewish people upon their exodus from Mitzrayim having experienced circumcision. Hartzoaz domim, the idea of blood being offered from sacrifices on that occasion, Dichtiv Aishlach Esnare Bnei Israel, and if you look in the Torah in that context of Shmos Perek Chof Dalet, you will see that sacrifices were offered during that event of the national conversion. Elo Tavila Menolan, where do you find a reference to immersion? Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, Vayikach Moshe Es Hadam Vayizrok Al Ha'am. The Pasuk records Moshe Rabbeinu taking the blood of sacrifices and sprinkling the blood on the people. V'ein hazah below tvila. When you see hazah, or sprinkling of blood, that takes place only if there had been immersion in a mikveh. So that, being that we accept that as axiomatic, that Zrikas Adam doesn't take place unless there had been immersion, so that assumes mikveh had been experienced. But nowadays, ho'idah means nowadays, when we don't have a korban option, but there's no Beis HaMikdash, so should we not accept converts? After we said that conversion requires these three elements, and one of them is the offering of sacrifices. Omar Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. Rav Acha answers that the issue of sacrificial offerings and conversion is referred to in the following pasuk: V'chi yogur itchem ger o asher besochechem ledoro sechem. So in this pasuk there is reference to the acceptance of converts throughout the generations. So the pasuk is already anticipating a situation where there won't be a Beis HaMikdash, and even so there is still the acceptance of converts. So you see that particular element can be waived when you don't have that as an option. Tana Rabbanan, Ger Bizman Hazeh, Tzorich Shiyafish Rov Alekino. A convert nowadays should set aside a coin, a rova, as an amount of money, for the purchase of bird offerings. So that, what are we trying to say here? That true, there is no Beis HaMikdash, but at least the ger should make some type of effort indicating that he is aware and anticipates the bringing of this sacrifice, and that would be accomplished by setting aside money for that purpose. Om Reb Shimon, Kfar Nimno Lov Reb Yochanan Zakkai Ubat Lov. Reb Shimon tells us that at an earlier generation, during the time of Reb Yochanan Zakkai, who lived at the time of the temple destruction, he came and annulled or voided that practice. Mitnei HaTakola, because of the possible misuse, the Takola literally is the stumbling or misuse of those monies. If a person set aside money for the purpose of the purchase of a sacrifice, that money would become holy, sanctified, and personal use of those monies would be sinful. And therefore, since there is no other use of those monies other than leaving them to sit around until the Beis HaMikdash would be rebuilt, that's inviting trouble. That's inviting the money that's just sitting a long time, sitting around, and one coming to its misuse or personal use, and that would be a sin. Therefore, don't even set aside the money in the first place. Omar Rav Idi Bar Gershom, Omar Rav Ado Bar Ahava, Halacha Kerebi Shimon. He rules like Rabbi Shimon, who said not to have the money set aside. The Ika Damasni Lo A Al Hoda de Tana Rabbanan. There are those that take this ruling of Rav Idi that said Halacha Rabbi Shimon and refer it to the following. So we'll now see have a Tanaic source which deals with the general topic of Gerim, and more specifically, in this source, we'll see the reference to a ger toshav, which is a type of individual who has not converted to Judaism, but who has departed from the realm of idolatry. He's accepted upon himself the non-worship of idols, and with many more details, but let's just go on in the source to see where Reb Shimon rules concerning the issue of Ger Toshav, the sojourning Ger. He is a Ger who, as we said, he's a non-Jew, but lives in our midst, amongst in the land of Israel, amongst other Jews. So he's called a Ger Toshav, and it says in this source, we will see it just a couple lines later, Reb Shimon speaks up, and that's what we will really be focusing on. The source says, Ger Toshav mutu lasos melocha b'shabbos la'atzmo kisrael b'cholo shamoi. The first opinion is that a Ger Toshav, this is, as we said, a person who accepts upon himself to abstain from idolatry, he becomes obligated to, with regard to melocha restriction, on Shabbos, the same way a Jew has malacha restrictions on Chol HaMoed. Malachas are listed in Maseches Shabbos Daf Ayin Gimel, a list of 39 different constructive activities that a person must refrain from on Shabbos. So this source teaches us that a Ger Toshav too has restrictions, according to the first opinion in this source. Restrictions like a Jew has on Chol HaMoed. Chol HaMoed are the intermediate days of a holiday, the non-formal Yom Tov days, the restrictive days. They're the weekday element of a holiday, where there too is a level of melacha restriction. It's not so far as Shabbos, but nevertheless, it does pose a series of days that a Jew is restricted from malachas. So this source is telling us that a Ger Toshav must observe Shabbos the same way that a Yisrael observes Chol HaMoed with regard to work or malacha restriction. Rabbi Kiva Omer, that the Ger Toshav is Yisrael b'Yom Tov, the same way a Yisrael has malacha restrictions on Yom Tov. Yom Tov are the holidays which are not as restricted as Shabbos. So a Ger Toshav on Shabbos has the same level of restrictions that a regular Jew has on Yom Tov. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Ger Toshav oise b'Shabbos le'atzmo kiyisrael b'choil. A Ger Toshav is entitled to work for him, to do things for himself, like a on Shabbos, like a Jew on the weekday. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Echad Ger Toshav ve'echad oved kichovim. Evet ve'amo hatoshavim, whether it be a Ger Toshav or a Gentile, whether it be a slave or a bondmaid, hatoshavim, they're not working for Jews. So oisin melacha b'Shabbos la'atzmon kisrael b'chol. All of this list that Reb Shimon has, they are entitled to do melachas on Shabbos for themselves, as opposed to doing things for another Jew, but they are entitled to do for themselves, as a Jew is unrestricted during the weekdays, the regular weekday. As we go on and encounter this new Mishnah, we have a topic heading on the outside margin, Havuas Korban al Hazadon Keshogeg, the bringing of a Korban, in the event that one violates a sin knowingly, as one would bring a sacrifice violating a sin unwittingly. This, in effect, is a continuation, if you will, of the Mishnah that we saw already on Daf Ches. In our shir on Daf Ches, we mentioned that this would happen. So the Mishnah says, Elu Mevi'in al Hazodon Keshogeg. The following are a list of those that bring sacrifices, even though their violation of the sin was done knowingly. And as we mentioned on our shir, when we were learning Dab Ches, this is a very unusual list in the sense that, generally speaking, by rule of thumb, sacrifices are brought only when sins were committed unknowingly, which we call b'shogeg. Here we have four examples of those that will bring, even though they violated knowingly. And they are as follows. Habo al Shifcha, one who has intimacy with a bondmaid. Vinozir Shenitma, a Nazirite who exposed himself to the defilement of the dead. The Ushua Soedus, a person who denies knowing testimony and he denies thusly under oath, Ushvas Hapikodon, a person who was entrusted with an item to watch, who denies under oath of having that particular he denies under oath matters concerning that particular entrusted item. Chamisha mevien korban echad al averos harbe, v'chamisha mevien korban oilo v'yoreid. This Mishnah, like we saw on Daf Ches, this idea of a list being offered. On Daf Ches, we had in our Mishnah, which was at the Ches Amid Beis, that is, at the beginning of the Perek, we had mentioned that there were four Mechusrei Kapora and four that bring Korbanos ala Zadon Kishogeg. So we just finished that list of Zadon Kishogeg involving four people. Here we have a new list of five that bring one Korban for multiple sins or events, and another list of five that bring Korbanos based on their income level, which we call Korban Ole V'Yored. Ole meaning the type of Korban will bring will be more expensive, will rise in price based on the individual's greater assets. And Yored will decline in price, will be able to bring a less expensive Korban, called more affordable, because of his lack of ability to pay, because of his lower asset holdings. And now the actual lists. Elu mevien korban echod al averos harbe. Now, it should be noted that we're going to now see only two examples cited in the Mishnah. The listings continue as we go on in this perek. We will see the completion of these lists, so that when eventually we encounter new Mishnayos, for example, on Omid Beis of this daf, we will see a continuation of these examples. So, in the meantime, we continue here with the first two examples. We said that there are those that bring one korban for many offenses. Habo al shifcho bios harbe, one who has relations, intimacy with a bondmaid, multiple intimacies, and the nozir shenitmo tumos harbe, a nozir, a Nazirite. He is a person who accepted certain restrictions upon himself by vowing to become a nozir. He is someone that's restricted from drinking wine, from taking haircuts, and from defiling himself to the dead. Let us say you have a nozir that experienced multiple defilements, so he'll bring one korban to cover all of those. This will be explained much greater detail in the Gemara. Now the Gemara. Habo al hashifcha minolon. Now we have to be careful when we ask the question minolon, from where do we know? The question here will be, from where do we know that he brings al ha zodon kishogeg? Because this Mishnah actually mentioned the reference to intimacy with a shifcha twice. One in the context of Zodon Kishogeg, and once in the context of Korban Echod al Averos Harbe. Maybe it's worth noting that the issue of Zodon Kishogeg that was featured in this Mishnah was a list of four that was highlighted or headlined in the Mishnah at the beginning of the Perek. The issue of Shifcha is mentioned again in this Mishnah as in the context of one korban for many offenses, but here the minolon is going on the case of Zodon Kishogeg. All of our introductory remarks will be helpful as we go on in the Gemara, where we will see the same Tanaic source cited on a couple of occasions, and the point of emphasis will change based on what we are trying to find out, what we're trying to find a source for. So, in the on the side of the Gemara, we have as our nosei, our havas korban al zodon kishogeg, the bringing of sacrifices for a knowing violation as one would bring ordinarily for an unknowing violation. The mivneh, the marking that we have here, is a house form, minolon, and these are mekoros ledugmos sheba mishnah. These will be looking for sources for the examples cited in the Mishnah. As soon as we start this Tanaic source, you can see there's a frame. You will immediately see the use of a bracketed section, and we have a note by the start comment across from here. The start comment says hasograim marim. The brackets show the tzitut ha'ikari hu me'ha'seifa, that the main quote from this source is coming from the seifa, from the end of the source. So that the question here is asked: how do I know that one who has intimacy with a shifl, with a bondmaid, knowingly will in fact bring a sacrifice as if he had done so unknowingly? So the answer to that question of Minol, from where do I know that? You would skip the brackets momentarily, and you see the source ends off by saying, V'nislach loy mechatosoy asher chota. That is the pasuk, and from this we learn, Lasos mezid kishogeg. From here we learn this idea. The fact that it says, asher chota, V'nislach loy mechatosoy asher chota, It sort of repeats itself. This pasuk that we'll see again when we read the whole source, there's a type of repetition here to tell me even that one shall bring a korban even on mazid like shogeg. Now, let's go over the whole source with a smooth reading. The Gemara had asked, from where do I know that he brings al sodan kishogeg, the Tanur Rabbanan? We have a pasuk. Now, this pasuk is found in the context of what's known as a shivcha harufa. For our purposes, we'll deal with her as a basic bondmaid. It says in the pasuk, "V'chiper olav hakohen be'el ha'asham lifnei Hashem al chatoso asher chota." Melamed. This teaches us shemevi korban echod al averos harbe, that he'll bring one sacrifice to cover many incidents of intimacy. Now that's not what we are looking for at this very moment, but rather we're looking for what is the source for the zodon kishogeg. So the pasuk goes on to say, "V'nislach loy mechatosoy asher chota." Now you'll notice the expression "asher chota" is repeated. We had in the first part of this quote was, he brings the El Oshem Lefnei Hashem Al Chataso Asher Chata, and then it says, and he shall be atoned for by the bringing of the Chatos Asher Chata Lasois Mezid Kishogeg. Now, one may ask, from where do we know that this is the whole structure of the Gemara, that the focus here was on finding a source for Zodon Kishkoga? Well, we'll appreciate that later in the Gemara. You will see on the fourth wide line of the Gemara, under the Rashi commentary, fourth of the widest lines, in the middle of the line, the Gemara there will say, "Kotoni abal shivcha bios harbe minolon." From where do I know multiple acts of intimacy? So there, the Gemara will be asking about multiple acts of intimacy. Therefore, we see from here that the minolon regarding the shivcha is focused on the zodon kishogeg, and that is what's taught in the seifa of this source. Hence, we knew to mark off the Gemara the way we did with the brackets. The Gemara continues, Nozir Shinitma Minolon, a Nozir who exposes himself to the dead knowingly brings a, even though it's done knowingly, he brings a sacrifice. The pasuk, how do we know that? Minolon, the Tana Rabbanon, the following source reveals this, V'chiyomus mei solov b'pesa pisoim. This pasuk is in the context of the Nozir, and the words are explained as follows, Pesa ze shogeg, that's a reference to his unwitting exposure to the dead, V'chenu omer, im b'pesa below evo hadofo, and you have this pasuk which indicates that the word pesa means something that's unwitting. this has to do with, this pasuk technically has to do with someone hitting someone else, attacking or injuring someone else, but he does so below Eva without hate. In other words, it's an unwitting type of offense or damage. The pasuk also says by Nazir, Pisom, Ze Oines. Pisom indicates some type of unwilling exposure to the mace, something that he hadn't planned to happen. There's beyond his control. V'cheinu omer v'yomer Hashem pisom el Moshe. In that pasuk, you see the word pisom means something sudden, without plan. Tanyo idach, and another source, pisom, ze mezid. The word pisom also has a mezid connotation, which is really, now you see we've dashed underlined the word mezid. We should have noted that the use of the triangles here is to highlight the different meanings of these words. So here, pisom has a mazed connotation. V'chenu omer, arum, ra, ra, v'nistab, psoim, avru, v'nanshu. In the context of this pasuk, you see the word psoim having to do with, since the pasuk mentions v'nanshu, receiving of punishment, punishment is meted out only for someone that did something willingly. Up to this point, then, we have seen that the word pisom has a ones connotation and a mazed connotation. We see also a reference that we made to Shogeg. Here, the Gemara asks, Nichtov kra pisom. Let the Torah write the word pisom. Now we have a bracket that's designed for skipping to make the reading easier, where the Gemara here suggests let the Torah write the word pisom, and then skipping these two lines, and we pick up velo nichtov kra pesa. Let the Torah write the word pisom, and just leave out the word pesa. Now, and what would I accomplish by that? Well, now let's go back to the brackets and see that having written the word pisom, I would have covered all of the circumstances. So far, by the way, we saw pisom meaning mazid, pisom referring to ones. In this bracketed section, we will see that the word pisom also refers to shogeg. So, if that be the case, so what do I gain by adding the word pesa, which referred to shogeg, when the word pisom would cover all circumstances of defilement to the dead? And from that, I would know that the nazir, who was nitma, will bring a sacrifice because of this. So here the Gemara says, let the Torah write pisom, demashma shogeg, umashma mezid, umashma oines. Mezivonis kid Omar, we already explained where you see the word pisom covering or referring to mezid and ones. Umashma nami shogeg, it also has a connotation of shogeg, some type of unwitting defilement. Dichtiv, pesi yamin l'chol davar. The word pesi, associated word pisom, indicates something that is of a shogeg nature. Velo nichtav kra pesa, and let the Torah just simply not write pesa. The Gemara answers, what do I gain, or what? Why was it necessary to write Pesa? I kosav kro pisom. If the Torah had written just the word pisom, afagav de mashma shogegu mashma mezidu mashma oines, even though, technically speaking, pisom covers all circumstances, hab amino, I would have thought, without the word Pesa present, ki maisi korban, when is it that the nazir is expected to bring a sacrifice? Shogeg, only under shogeg circumstances, which is unwitting. Midi dahavi al Torah kula, similar to the way we treat sinning throughout the rest of the Torah. Namely, that only under circumstances of shogeg do we find people bringing sacrifices. Aval oines umezid emalo. But with regard to something done beyond one's control, or something done knowingly, I would have thought not so, that there would be no sacrifice, and in this case, no sacrifice on the part of the nazir that defiled himself under ones or mazid circumstances. Therefore, Kosav Rachmona Pesa, therefore the Torah added this word Pesa, the Shogeg Hu. Pesa refers exclusively to Shogeg. Ligliya lo de Pisom, to reveal that the word Pisom that the Torah uses in this Nozir context, the Einus Umezid Hu. So that will be available to cover the onus and mazid cases. The afilu hachichay of rachmono, that even if it's onus or mazid, in the case of the nazir, unlike the rest of the Torah, the nazir shenitma will yes bring a will bring his sacrifices. Shvuas ha'edus, one who knowingly denied knowledge of testimony under oath. From where do I know that he brings a sacrifice, even though he denied thusly, knowingly, knowing that that was a sin? Minolon, from where do I know this? The Tana Rabbanan. The source says, Bechulo ne'emar v'ne'eman v'ne'elam. In all those that bring sacrifices, Rashi mentions over here, Bekulon bechol hamevien oila v'yored sheba oisa parshin, all those that bring fluctuating price sin offerings that are mentioned in that particular section, kagon metame mikdash ushwas bitoy, one who exposes and who defiles the beis hamikdash, who enters in a state of defilement, or who swears to he swears ushwas bitoy, a type of oath one takes, dechtivi behu ushwas edus, together with them you find this denial of testimony under oath. So this example known as Shvuas Ha'edus is taught together with the other cases, so that with regard to its, let's say, fellow examples, you find the word V'ne'elam. V'ne'elam means something that is hidden from. Person is sins unwitting, unknowingly. Kan lo ne'emar V'ne'elam. However, here in the case of the Shvuas Ha'edus, it doesn't use that word v'ne'elam. What does that reveal? L'chayev al hamezid kishogeg, to tell us, to reveal to us, that one who is in violation even knowingly will bring a sacrifice as one who violates unknowingly. Shvuas hapikadon minolon, from where do we know the case of someone who lies under oath concerning an item he was asked to watch, that he too is obligated, though he violates, though he swears, knowing that he is sinning, that nevertheless he will bring a sacrifice. Minolon, answer, Yolif techto techto mishvuas ha'edus. He learns thusly through a word comparison from Shvuas ha'edus. And just like with regard to Shvuas ha'edus, which was the topic we mentioned just before this, that one brings under mazed circumstances, so too with regard to oaths concerning items given to watch. The shomer who swears falsely will be obligated to bring a korban, even though he swore knowing that he was sinning. Chamisha mevien korban echod al averos harbe. This was the new list, the additional list in the Mishnah, that there are five that bring one korban for multiple violations. Kotani, it mentioned habo al hashivcho bios harbe. So here we ask, me nolon, from where do we know this? The Tanu Rabbanan, we have a Tanaic source, and you'll note that this source is the same as the source quoted above. We have a little arrow, in fact, to indicate this by your aligning this arrow with the arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara a number of lines up. You'll see where this was mentioned earlier. So the Pasuk says in Vayikra, Perek, Yutes, Pasuk, Chof, Beis, V'chiper, Olov, HaKayin, Be'el, Ha'asham, Lefnei, Hashem, Al chataso asher chata. Melamed shemevi korban echod al averos harbe. Now, this is exactly what we were looking for. So here we have a source for this idea of one korban for multiple offenses. Now, as we go on, we've used a bracket to show that this is really secondary. It's not the main reason for this source have being brought in, but it says, v'nislach lo mechataso asher shogag, asher chata. Lasos mazid kishogeg. The the Gemara now asks, V'hokra kiksiv b'mezid ksiv. This pasuk is written in the context of someone who does something knowingly. So that, why is there a reference here to when? Why do you say at the end of this source that this source is to inform us that the mezid, the knowing violator, is to be made, is to be treated like the shogeg, when the pasuk itself is emphasizing the mezid, the knowing violator? Elo ema, rather, you should learn thusly. Lasos shogeg kemezid, that the repetition of asher chata here tells me that even one who violates unknowingly will be treated like the one who violates knowingly. Namely, in this pasuk, we're dealing primarily with someone who violates knowingly, and the pasuk says he shall bring a korban. And the additional expression in this pasuk is to include the other case, namely the case of shogeg is to be treated like the mezid, that he too shall bring a sacrifice. Bo minei Rabbi Hanina tirnoa mi Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Hanina asks of Rabbi Yochanan, Haboal chomei shvachos harufois behelam echad mahu. Let us say a person has relations with five bondmaids in one state of lack of awareness. The term shivcha charufa, that itself is the subject of a lengthy discussion or multiple Tanaic opinions elsewhere in the Shas. But for our purposes at this juncture in our limud, let us simply refer to her as a bondmaid, even though we are doing so knowing that there's much more to this expression than we are revealing right now. But the question right now is, how do we know, or what is the din of one who has acts of intimacy with five separate, in other words, he has five acts of intimacy with five separate shifos, and he does so with one in one state of lack of awareness. In other words, he's not aware of the prohibition. And he goes ahead and approaches five different shvachos and has intimacy with each one of them. The question here is, chayav al kol achas v'achas, o eino chayav elo achas. Is he obligated to bring sacrifices for each act, for the act that he had with each woman, the singular act that he had with each woman? Or is one sacrifice sufficient? Amarle, so Rabbi Yochanan, who was asked the question, he responds and says, Chayav al kol achas v'achas. He's obligated to bring a separate sacrifice for the act that he had with each woman. The Gemara asks, Mai shno mechomesh halomos b'shifcha achas. What is different about this than the case of five acts of intimacy that he has with one shifcha in a continuous state of lack of awareness? Where we had taught earlier that if such a thing would happen, one sacrifice would cover the five separate acts. Amale, shivcha achas ein gufin muchlokin. When you're dealing with five acts with one shivcha, with one bondmaid, so you're not dealing with separate bodies, separate women, separate individuals. There are five acts, but they're with one person. Hey, shvachos, gufen muchlochen. Five different bondmaids, you've got five separate bodies, five separate women. Umenolan de gabi shvachos, gufen muchlochen. From where do we know that when it comes to bondmaids and this prohibition of having intimacy with them, that separate individuals generates separate sacrifices? From where do we know that point? Omale, so he answers, Lav Amris, is it not said Gabi Arayas? In the case of forbidden relatives, the pasuk says V'isha, V'lechalek al kol isha v'isha, that in the event that someone has intimacy with five separate forbidden relatives, the presence of the word V'isha tells me that for each separate woman, there will be a separate sacrifice generated in the case that he is in violation of this unknowingly. Gabi Shifchonami Ksiv, just so too by the issue of bondmaid, it says there in Posuk Chof, Asher Yishkav Es Isha Shichvas Zera vihi shivcha. And so from that pasuk we learn lechalek al kol shivcha v'shivcha. So just like in the case of Arias, we have the pasuk that tells us that for each separate woman there's a separate sacrifice, so too we have a pasuk in the case of Shivcha that tells us for each Shivcha there is the generation of a separate sacrifice. Nozir shinitmo tumos harbe man tana. Who would be the Tanaic authority that stands behind our Mishnah? The Gemara answers with a long answer. We've indicated this with a long answer marking. That's the tuft that you see encircled to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line. In this long answer, we will see two Tanaic authorities presented. And we will tell you that our Mishnah conforms to only one of these two approaches to the issue of the Nozir Shinitmo Tumos Harbe. So, Omar Rav Chisda, Rav Yossi, Rav Yudahi, our Mishnah conforms to Rav Yossi's approach, the Omar, Nazirus, the Taro, Mishvi'ihu dechaylo ole. Nazirus the Taro is a reference to the Nazir, who had become defiled, and needs to restart his Nazirus counting. Nazirus, unless otherwise qualified, is a period of 30 days. If a person accepts upon himself through a vow to become a Nazir, he must restrict himself from wine, from defilement to the dead, and from haircuts for a period of 30 days. In the event he becomes Tomei, namely he was exposed to Tumas Meis, he stops his Nazir counting and observes 7 clean days of free from defilement, and after that he restarts his counting of the Nazirus. So now the question is, what is the exact point in time that he restarts his Nazir counting? So Rabbi Yossi Rebuda says Nazirus Tatara, which is a reference to his basic Nazirus counting, which is a time period during which he must be maintain Tahara, that is Mishvi'i Hu Dechaylo Ole. He starts his new counting from day 7. We mentioned that a person who had become Tomei must observe 7 clean days, 7 days free of defilement. Well, on day 7 itself, that counts as day 1 toward the counting of 30 for his Nazirus of Tahara. So let us imagine then, he starts his recounting on day 7. When, by the way, is the Nazir expected to bring his sacrifices that were generated by the Tum'ah? Those are brought on day 8, namely after observing 7 days free from defilement. On day 8, he brings his sacrifices. According to Rabbi Yossi Ben Yehuda, when does he start his Nazir Tahara counting? He counts, actually, on the day before he brings the sacrifices that that were generated as a result of the Tumah. So Rabbi Yossi says he starts his counting of his Nazir Tahara on day 7. U'mishkachas law, you will find a case of multiple Nazir offenses of Tumah, and yet one korban is brought to cover all of the different defilements. Kagoin shenitma b'shvi'i, v'chozar v'nitma b'shvi'i. He became tomei on day 7 after he started counting his Nazirus Tatara. Maybe we'll start this case again. We'll go over it. A person had become a Nazir, and at some point he became Tomei, at which point he counts 7 days of clean days. But on that day 7, he became Tomei again, and then had to wait 7 clean days. But again, on the following day 7, again became Tomei. And this repeats itself. The Kevon, so that itself we can call multiple sins. V'kevan de lo yotza shah ruya lahakriv bo korban, since he never reached day 8 in a state of cleanness, eino chayav elo korban echad. Since this re-defilement took place each time on day 7, never actually reaching day 8, the day in which he could bring his sacrifices, this enables him to fulfill his sacrificial obligations by bringing one sacrifice. The E, Rebbe, for if we were to analyze things through the approach taken by Rebbe, Kevan Diyama Rebbe Nazirus de Tara lo ad shmini lo chayla ole, the ability to count the new Nazirus doesn't start until day 8. As opposed to Rabbi Yossi, who says the starting of the new Nazirus Tara starts on day 7. Rebbe says it starts on day 8. E denitma b'shvi, v'chazer benitma b'shvi, if he became redefiled each time on day 7, according to Rebbe, kula tuma arichtahi, it's all one long period of tuma. He never started a new Nazirus counting, so it's just one elongated tuma period, and therefore we would not be able to call it averos harbe, as the Mishnah says. The E denitma b'shmini, v'chazer benitma b'shmini, if he reached day 8, and only then became tomei again. Kevan de yatsas shah shuri lahakriv korban, since his new defilement took place on day 8, well, at the beginning of day 8, he became obligated to bring his sacrifices from the previous defilement. The fact that he becomes defiled again on that day 8, that will simply generate a new korban obligation. That's mechayev al kol achas v'achas. A circumstance like that will generate a new additional set of sacrifices for each defilement, and therefore it wouldn't fit into that scheme, wouldn't fit into the Mishnah either, of someone classified as multiple sins and bringing only one sacrifice. Here you would have multiple defilements, but each one would generate a separate sacrifice. Elo shma mina, therefore we must conclude that our Mishnah, which made reference to multiple sins, in this case multiple defilements, and only one korban would be necessary, is Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda he. It's only according to, our Mishnah conforms only according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. Just to repeat the scenario again, we're talking about someone who was a Nazir, he became Tomei, and then on day 7 of his clean days, he became Tomei again. What was significant about day 7? Well, day 7 represented his opportunity to restart a new Nazirus counting, the Nazirus of Tara. But on that day he became Tomei again. And this repeats itself again and again. So we have multiple Nazirus Tara becoming defiled, and yet one korban will cover all of these defilements. That is Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda's approach, and that is what our Mishnah says of one korban for averos harbe. The Gemara now asks, what's the source in which you find these shitos, my Rabbi Yossi Bermuda, where, what is the source in which he appears, Desanya, the Pasuk mentions, V'kidesh es rosho bayomahu. This is a reference to a Nazir who had become Tomei and needs to start his Nazirus of Tara again, and it says that he shall sanctify his head on that day. In other words, that's the day on which the new Nazirus will restart. What is Bayomahu a reference to? Bayoim Havas Korbanosov. That's the day in which the Nazir who had been defiled brings his sacrifices. That happens to be day 8 of the clean days. Well, that's Rebbe's opinion, but we're really looking for Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda Omer Bayom Tiglachoso, on the day that the Nazir Tomei is expected to take his Tomei haircut. That happens to be on day 7. Day 7 of those clean days, after having become defiled, maybe 7 days after his defilement, he takes a haircut. And that's what the Pasuk is referring to here, which regards to the restarting of his Nazir Tara counting on the day that he takes his haircut. That happens to be on day 7. We have a number or numbering that appears in this Mishnah, and our note reads that this Hamispur Mishnah HaKodemus, this counting is a continuation of the previous Mishnah. So in the previous Mishnah, we already mentioned two examples of one korban covering multiple offenses. We mentioned the case of Boaz Shipcha Bios Harbe, that was one, and number two was Nozir Shnitma Tumas Harbe. And here we have now number three. Hamekana Liishto Ayidei Anoshim Harbe. This involves a man who is suspicious of his woman, of his wife, that is, of having intimacy with other men. A married woman, of course, is forbidden with a death penalty attached to her of having intimacy with other men. If a man is mekana, mekana indicates he warns her. He warns her, which is a major topic that you find in the opening of Maseches Sota, which is one of the mainstays, one of the pillars of the issue of the Isha Sota, the suspected married woman. A man warns his wife. He's mekana her, and he warns her concerning relations with a number of different men. So he was mekana his wife regarding a number of different men, and eventually she is found to be in private with those different men. The sota woman is expected to bring a sacrifice in the Beis HaMikdash. So what this Mishnah is telling us, that even though she's been in private, and there's a doubt, of course, did she actually have intimacy or not? So when we speak about in private, we mean literally in private and not as a euphemism per se. So she will bring, even though she was warned and she was warned against and found to be in private with a number of different men, one sacrifice will suffice in the tahara of the sota tahara process. Number four, umitzura shenisnage negoim harbe. A mitzora that experienced multiple negoim, multiple appearances of tzaras. Hevi tziporim v'nisnaga, lo olu lo achiyovi chatoso. If he brings the birds, which are part of the purification process of a mitzora, we might as well mention that a mitzora, his mitzora status is determined by the ruling of a kohen. When the kohen comes and notices that the tzaras has become reduced or disappeared from the victim, so on that day when the kohen offers his ruling, the mitzora brings birds, not as sacrifices but rather as a ritual, where one bird is slaughtered over a container of water, and the other of the two birds is sent free. That's a reference to the birds. So if you have a case of a mitzora who brought his birds and then became a menuga again, we should have mentioned maybe that after the bringing of the birds, he waits a period of 7 days, and on the eighth day, the mitzora then brings his series of sacrifices, an ola, osham, and a chatos, in the Beis HaMikdash, as opposed to the birds, which are not brought in the Beis HaMikdash. So we have described here a mitzora that brought his birds after having been declared to be tzoras free, and then he experienced a nega, another tzoras appearance. Lo olu lo achiyovi chatoso. This will be explained at greater length in the Gemara. Review to Omer, achiyovi ashamo. Minolon. So first we address we seek out the source for the beginning of the Mishnah concerning the man suspicious of his wife and issuing a warning concerning multiple men. Dechtiv zois teras haknos. Torah achas lekinuyin harbe. One rule, in this case one Torah, meaning one korban, to cover many different men that were against whom she was warned not to be together with. Mitzora shenis naga negoyim harbe min olon. From where do we know that multiple negoyim can be atoned for or covered by one set of mitzora sacrifices? Tichtiv, the pasuk says, Zois teras hamitzora, Torah achas lemitzoroyin harbe. One Torah, and as we said before, one Torah is a reference to one set of korbanos for many experience of tzoras. Hevi tziporim v'nisnaga loy olu loy ad shiyovi chatoso. Rabbi Omer, ad shiyovi ashamo. the initial understanding, and which gives rise to the Gemara's question, is that he will what the Mishnah said when Hevi Tzipor v'Nisaga Lo Olulo. It sounds like he's going to have to bring additional bird offerings. Offerings is in the context of we'll call it the bird ritual. He'll have to repeat that for each nega. So the Gemara asks, why will have to bring new birds each time? V'ha'amris ein mevi ela korban echad. Did we not say that he brings only one offering for multiple negoyim? Let us glance at the Rashi found on Divrei Masu v'ha'amris. At the beginning of the Gemara commentary of this section, he says, V'ha'amris eino mevi ela korban echad. Al negoyim harbei, he brings one offering for many negoyim. Al mochad sarasa richtahi. If he had, let us say, he had left his saras and then brought the birds, but then became tomei again. Rashi says, "Amai mechayvis leosui tziporim al kol nega." Why does he have to bring birds again? Did we not say that One offering covers many different appearances of tzoras? So the Gemara explains, Chisurei mechasra v'hochi kotani. The Mishnah is to be understood as follows. Hevi tziporim v'nisnaga, and we add here, Hevi tziporim v'nisnaga. What happened here is a person brought the birds, became a tzoras, and then that second tzoras was declared, tzoras free, and then brought again birds. Ein mevi ela korban echad. So that the reference to the multiple birds is you're dealing with a person that actually brought birds a second time. He had once again become tzoras free, then brought birds, experienced a nega again, brought birds again, and then became a menuga, again with tzoras. So under such circumstances, eventually when the tzoras doesn't reappear, he'll bring one set of tzoras korbonas. Ulakbuye banius bashirus lo mikba ad shiovi chatos. To establish what the cost type of korban he will bring, the expensive type, the animal type, or the bird type korban, which is less expensive, that is established based on his income level or his asset value based on the time that he actually brings the korban chatos. That's the first opinion. Rabbi Yehuda says, ad shiovi ashamo. It's dependent on what his status is when he brings the korban oshem. As we mentioned, the metzora brings three types of korbanos. He brings an ola, an oshem, and a chatos. The question is, at what type of korban will he bring based on his asset level? So we look at him at the time that he's bringing. Well, and here you see a machlokes tanoim. The first opinion says we look at his value, his asset value, when he brings his korban chatos. And Rabbi says we look at his asset value at the time that he brings the korban oshem. Let us now look at the Rashi. Ulakbuye banius, v'hochi ko'omar. Thusly, the Mishnah is teaching. V'lo olu hatziporim likba banius ubashirus. Tziporim, the birds that he brings, they do not serve to commit the mitzorah to the type of korban. Dim hoya oni b'shas havo tziporim. If you have a person that was poor at the time he brought the birds, the Heshir, and then became wealthy, Tzorach Lahavi Korban Oshir. He'll have to bring the wealthy man's korban, the expensive type sacrifice. Bimhoya Oshir, if he was wealthy at the time that he brought the birds, Veheni, and then became impoverished, maybe Oni Bedalus. He'll then bring the poor man's type sacrifice. Ad Shiovi Chatoso. This is all, let's say, flexible until he actually brings the korban chatos. The bosor chatos, aslinon, we look at his income level, or at his financial value level, at the time that he brings the korban chatos, bein banius, bein bashirus. then he is fixed. Whether later on he becomes impoverished or he becomes wealthy, it is all established at what his status is at the time that he brings the Korban Chatos. So that the initial understanding of the Mishnah is quite changed now, when as far as the bird ceremony is concerned, that will be repeated every time he had experienced Negoyim, and then the Kohen says the Nega has departed, he brings birds. And if after he brings the birds, he becomes Menuga again, and then that Nega departs, he'll bring again birds. The issue of one korban covering multiple situations of Saras isn't dealing with the birds. The issue, though, of what was the appearance then in this Mishnah of the Chatos and Osham, that appeared in this Mishnah in terms of determining what his income level would be with regard to the bringing of his other sacrifices. Tanan Hosam, Mitzorah Shehifrish Korbono Vehashir, a Mitzorah that set aside his sacrifice and then became wealthy. Hakol Holech Achar Chatos, Divrei Rabbi Shimon. The type of korban he brings will be dependent on what his income level is at the time that he brings the korban chatos. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Hakol Holech Achar Osham. Rabbi Yehuda says it is all based on, in other words, the type of korban that he will bring is based on what his status is at the time that he brings the korban Osham. Tanya, another source that we've included in the same frame, says Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Hakol Holech Achar Tziporim. Everything is based on what his income level is at the time that he brings the birds. The birds, of course, are the birds that he brings initially, and we're not referring here to a sacrifice in the Beis Hamikdash. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav, Shloshton Mikra Echad Darshu. These three Tanaic opinions base themselves on the same pasuk. The pasuk says, "Asher lo tasig yodoi b'taraso." This is a pasuk referring to someone that can't afford. That's Asher lo tasig yodoi, is a reference to someone that can't afford, and the Torah makes an allowance for, we'll say, flexibility, and it says b'taraso. Before going on in the Gemara, we glance at the Rashi. Asher lo tasig yodoi b'shas taraso yovi ba'anius. He shall bring the poor man's type sacrifice, in other words, the less expensive, the cheap sacrifice, which is a bird offering. Afalpi sheheshir, even though later on he may become wealthy. So that this pasuk is referring to the bringing of the cheaper korban, even though he may enter wealth later on. Reb Shimon Savar, Davar HaMechapro, the term Tohoraso in this pasuk is a reference to that which offers atonement. Rashi makes a hint or makes a brief reference, a concise reference to the fact that in the case of Tzoras, there is a need for atonement because Tzoras comes as a result of different types of poor behavior. So the word b'taraso, Reb Shimon takes to mean that which is mechaper. What sacrifice is an atoning sacrifice? That's the chatos, the sin offering. Reb Yehuda Savar Davar HaMachshiro, something that is machshir him, that means someone that needs to receive an allowance or a ritual in order to enable him to partake of kachim. That's the term machshiro, that literally that kashers him for the eating of sacrifices. And of course, a person who was in a state of tumah, as is the case with a mitzvah, he can't eat sacrifices. So what enables him, what is the element or the sacrifice that is the machshir? That is the korban osham. And hence Rabbi Yehuda says, HaKol Olech Achar HaOsham. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer Dover HaGorein Lo Tara. The word taroso in the pasuk he takes quite literally, meaning it's that which enables him or starts him on the tara track, on the tara, on the purification process. Umay Ninu, and what is that? What is the catalyst or the cause of his tara? What enables him to start the tara process? Siporam, that's a reference to the birds. This Mishnah is a continuation of the list that we saw before of five examples of people that bring one korban to cover many cases. And the example number five is Ho'isha Shiyolda Vlados Harbe, a woman who had many children. Now, what's the explanation of this? Obviously, it does not refer to a woman who, let's say, gives birth year after year or every 2 years to separate births. That kind of woman will obviously bring a separate sacrifice for each birth. We are dealing with a specific case, and that's what the Mishnah goes on to explain. Hipila besoch shmonim nekeva. Chazor vipila besoch shmonim nekeva. A woman who had given birth to a female offspring, and she is considered in a state of, we'll say, she's known as a tfulas yom oroch, a state of elongated tumah for a period of 80 days. During the first 14 of those 80 days, so she's forbidden even to have intimacy with her husband, and during the balance of the 66 days, she is muteris in intimacy, but she's forbidden to eat from sacrifices. Let us say that during those 80 days, since a female birth, she experienced a miscarriage. And then, so that's the case of Hipila Basoch Shmonim Nekeva, and then again, after a female miscarriage, experiences another miscarriage within 80 days of that, she will be able to bring one sacrifice to cover all of those miscarriages. Vamapeles Teumim. Rashi explains this under Dibur Maschil, Vamapeles Teumim, Afilu Zechorim, even in the case of male births. Actually, it would benefit us better, more, or maximally, if we go through the Rashi before this. Ho'isha Shiyolda Vlados, the Komeforesh Ketzad. What is the case of Vlados Harbe, which yield one sacrifice? Kagoin Shepilo Lesoch Shmonim Shonekeva, within 80 days of a female birth. Kagoin Shetovla Lachar Shvoyim, a woman who had immersed herself, enabling her to have intimacy after a period of 2 weeks. That's Lachar Shvoyim de Tuma. Vishimshon had intimacy, Vinis Avra, and conceived. Vipilo Nekeva Lachar Mem, Shel Yitzir Savlad. And 40 days after her intimacy, she had a miscarriage. Dainu Nundala Leleda. That figures to be 54 days since her birth, since the birth of the original child. That's Leleda Rishona. Vichozra. Vipilo Lesof Nundalad Shelzu, and then 54 days after that miscarriage, another miscarriage. Ulochi Nokat Nekeva, the reason that the Mishnah is focusing on female births, the Bizhorim Lekolamemar Hochi. With regard to a male birth, you can't figure this calculation. A male birth results in a 40 day Tumah period. But the first 7 of those days, she is forbidden in intimacy. So that if day 8, let us say she conceives, she and then has a miscarriage, if the miscarriage is before day 40 arrives, you're talking about a fetal development of 33 days, that doesn't yield tumah. That doesn't cause tumah. Di pila besoch mem dezochar maya ba'almahu. Fetal development is considered of no significance within 40 days. It's considered just water. High sheni, that's my bamu hu high sheni. The second, that miscarriage would be just water. The ain of lad notzar ad yom mem. That we don't say there's fetal development until day 40. That's why, in order to develop this case of multiple births, we have to talk about a female birth, which generates an 80-day tumah period, and therefore, at day 54 or beyond that, we can speak about a subsequent miscarriage, which would result in tumah because it's considered a developing embryo and not mayobayam, not just mere water. The next case in the Mishnah was Mapelis Teomim. It's what's called a twin miscarriage. But what do we mean specifically? So here Rashi elaborates. Mapelis Teomim, Afilu Zechorim, even if they be males, Kagon, Shinis Abro, Shloisha. A woman became pregnant with triplets. Vipilo, Echod, Lacharmem. One of the triplets was miscarried after 40 days, 40 days since her intimacy. Vasheni nishtav yotze besoch yemei toa rishon, and the second of the triplets delayed and eventually emerged during the Yemei Tohar of the four, of the first. The first, remember, we said there was a 40-day period of Tumas Leda. So during those 40 days, the second one emerged. Ushlishi besoch Yemei Tohar Desheni, and the third of the triplets was miscarried within 40 days of the second one. Al kol elu mevio korban echad al achron uptura. She'll bring one sacrifice for the last of the miscarriages, and there she's thereby exempted, and she is that covers all of the miscarriages. We continue in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer mevio al harishon veino mevio al hashnia mevio al hashlishi veino mevio al harvii. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with regard to these succeeding miscarriages. Let us glance at the Rashi. Rabbi Yehuda polig bein avlodos bein atumim v'omar mevio korban echod al harishon. The woman who miscarries, and we're talking about it once again, these consecutive miscarriages, she'll bring a korban for the first miscarriage, al avlod harishon, v'lo al hasheni, but not for the second miscarriage. The second miscarriage took place within the melos, is that period of 80 days of the first birth, so that the second one is absorbed within the need for having the need for a korban for the first birth. The second one, which takes place within the 80-day period of the first birth, is enveloped in or included in that. So the second is included in the first. However, umavia shlishi, she will have to bring a second korban for the third miscarriage. Why? Because in our example above, the third miscarriage, which we said before, every day 54, she experienced a new miscarriage. In other words, she was conceiving and then miscarrying. So each one of those subsequent miscarriages, the third one is it generates a new sacrifice. Mishum dehu lo nola toch melos derishon. That third miscarriage was not within the 80 days of the first miscarriage, and therefore the lo chashvinon melos lesheni, we don't reckon with or consider of significance the melos generated by the second miscarriage, the kaman the lesse domi. That second miscarriage is considered as if it's not there, as far as calculations are concerned. Hayul v'noila toch melos sharishon, since it was enveloped within the first birth. Ushleishi havit filas leida, the third miscarriage is considered a new birth and a new counting. Ve'eno mevia korban arvi, a fourth miscarriage that takes place within the melos of the third won't generate a new korban hoyel v'nola toch melos shel shlishi. Aval shlishi lo nola toch melos derishon. The third miscarriage did not take place within the melos, the first 80 days. Deha avru yemei tuma derishon. The yemei tuma of the first birth have already passed. Davitvei mipei. You're beyond day 80 l'rishon. The Gabitumin Nami Dikopolig Rebuta, the case of the triplet pregnancy, there Rebuta will also disagree. Kagon Shinola Shlishi Lachar Melos Derishon, where the third miscarriage was after the completion of the first melos of the first birth. The Amelos Desheni Lo Ichbaslo Dikamanda Lesedomi. Regarding the melos that's generated by the second birth, that is of no concern to Rebuta because he views it as if it's not there. This will be explained in much greater detail when we get into the Gemara itself. Now, the Gemara opens up with the question of Minolan. We mentioned that a woman who has multiple miscarriages, one sacrifice will cover her requirements. From where do we know this? The Tani Tano Kamedu Rav Sheshes. There was a Tanaic source taught in the presence of Rav Sheshes. Zois Teras Hayoledes Lazachor Vilanekevo. From this pasuk, we learn that she brings one sacrifice for many offspring. Yochol af al haleda v'al haziva. Should one think that one korban will cover a woman who both had a child and also experienced Ziva? Talmud Lomar Zos. The word Zos is a limitation expression, excluding that case. Kotani, it said in this source something that might have appeared perplexing. In other words, the source raised a possibility of something that is a little odd. Kotani, it said here, Yochol al Haleda v'al Haziva. Could it be that one korban will cover a birth and Ziva? That Eino Mavio Elo Korban Echod, that she brings only one sacrifice? Well, Elo Me'ata, if that be the case, Ochlo Dam Violda, Ochinami Dein Mavio Elo Korban Echod. If a woman had, let us say, ate blood, which is something that generates the need for a sin offering, and she also gave birth, would you think that one sacrifice would cover both events? Of course not. They're two separate, unrelated things. So what was the intent of the opening source, which suggested some type of hava amina for which the pasuk Zos came to dismiss? Obviously, you don't need a pasuk to dismiss some type of scenario that I wouldn't have thought of even in the first place. Therefore, Eimo Hochi, say thusly, Yochol al Haleda Shelifnei Molois, V'al Haleda Shelahar Molois. Could it be that one sacrifice would cover a birth that took place before the Molois and a birth that takes place after the Molois? Talmud Lomar Zos. Regarding that case, the Torah says no. This whole concept of one korban covering multiple ledos, that is assuming only that the subsequent ledo, the subsequent birth or miscarriage, took place within the molos, the tuma days of the previous birth. But if a woman, let's say, experienced a birth or a miscarriage and then completed her tuma days, and after that she has a new miscarriage, there she doesn't bring one sacrifice, but each birth will generate a separate sacrifice. Before going on in the Gemara, we have a topic heading, which we call the No Say, and you find this in the outside margin. And we have written, the title here is, Hipila Besoch Shmoinim Shel Nekeva. A woman experienced a miscarriage within 80 days of a female birth. V'achrei pei, after 80, shuv hipila, she then has another miscarriage. The Rebbe Yehuda, Vlad Harishon Goreim, according to Rebbe Yehuda, it's the first birth that is of is the causative factor. Te chayeves shnei korbanos. In this case, a woman who had a miscarriage within 80 days of a ledas nekeva, and then another miscarriage that took place beyond the 80 days. So the first birth, that, according to Rebbe Yehuda, will generate a sacrifice. The second birth, being within the 80 days of the first birth, is included in that korban. But a third birth or miscarriage after those first 80 days will, according to Rebbe Yehuda, generate an additional korban. The Rabbonon, Vlad Sheni, Klomar Achron, Goreim. According to the Rabbonon, it's the second. In this particular example, the second child is the one that is going to be responsible or cause the bringing of the sacrifice. Therefore, if the third miscarriage takes place within 80 days of that second birth, even though it's beyond 80 days of the first birth, there is no need for an additional sacrifice. The Gemara. Hipila besoch shmon v'chulei, keshetimse lomar l'div Reb Yehuda, when you look into Reb Yehuda's approach, the way we learned him in the Mishnah, Vlad Rishon Goreim. It's the first, the emphasis is placed on the first birth. That is the cause of the korban. Umi Vlad Rishon Mona, and the counting is done from the first birth. In other words, if the first birth was a female birth, and we say there is 80 days associated with the Yemei Tuma of the Ledas Nekeva. Any miscarriages within the 80 days of that first birth
is included in the korban, but any miscarriage after those 80 days is not associated with the original korban, and we'll have to bring a new one. L'divrei chachamim, vlad sheni goreim, umivlad sheni moneh. According to the chachamim, the goreim of the korban is the second birth, that caught the second miscarriage or birth, and hence if a third birth takes place within 80 days of that second miscarriage, it will be included in that korban. The Gemara says, what is the need for this analysis? Tinsalomar is when you look into it. Pshita hachi isa, that's exactly what they said. So what does the Gemara mean by this expression, kishetimsa, when you look into their respective shitas? So the Gemara answers, mapelis te'umim itzderi chalei. The revelation of the Gemara is felt, is best understood in the case of the woman who was initially pregnant with multiple fetuses. In other words, they would say like the case of the triplets that she had been pregnant with. There, I need to be taught this point. Sakadaita chamina, I would have thought that in that case, the mapelas ta'omim, moide rebuta le rabbonon, that their rebuta would concede to the rabbonon that one korban will cover even the third miscarriage of the third miscarriage. Namely, that the malois of the second miscarriage of these triplets, that second one would generate its own malois. And therefore, the third triplet to emerge within the malos, within the tuma days of the second one, would be covered by that korban. Komash malon, the Gemara tells us that Rabbi Yehuda sticks hard to his approach that we establish the tuma based on the first birth and not the second birth, even though they were all conceived at the same time. Let us look at the Rashi, second line from the bottom. Mapelas te'umim itzrich lei, mishum mapelas te'umim itzrich lei tana l'shminon, because of the miscarriage of the twin pregnancy, the Tana has to tell us the mapelas te'umim nami polig Rabbi Yehuda, that even in that case Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and offers his dissenting opinion. Demahu detema b'te'umim moide, one might have thought without this, that in the case of a multiple twin or a multiple pregnancy, Rabbi Yehuda would concede the chada leido arichti, it's considered one long birth, hayol viburon kacha, since their conception was together, was simultaneous, vizleinami los lesheni, and Rabbi Yehuda would have applied a premium or significance to the second birth, ushlishi lav bar korban hu, and that the third one would not have generated a new korban. So therefore, we need our analysis here to tell us that Rabbi Yehuda places an emphasis on the vlad rishon under all circumstances, not only in subsequent conceptions and miscarriages, but even in the case of an initial multiple twin or a multiple initial pregnancy of triplet or more pregnancy. Even there, Rabbi Yehuda applies his analysis of emphasis on the first malois, the first birth, thereby causing the third birth, which emerges outside the realm of the first tumah period, as generating a separate korban. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.